Okay, so welcome to the second Quids in Radio show. Today we have the consumer goods team and the pharmaceuticals team. So if you'd like to introduce yourselves.
Hi, I'm Max. I'm the division manager for the pharmaceuticals team.
Hi, I'm Boris. I'm an analyst for the pharmaceuticals team.
Hi, I'm Nelly. I'm an analyst for consumer goods.
Hi, I'm Kishan. I'm an analyst for consumer goods as well.
Hi, I'm Josh. I'm an analyst for consumer goods.
Hi, I'm Harry. I'm an analyst for the pharmaceuticals division.
Hi, I'm Georgia. I'm an analyst for pharmaceuticals as well.
Okay, to begin, we're going to talk about sort of the big events that have happened recently in the last week. The big key one is obviously the OPEC meeting. There was a sort of the cartel met really last week to sort of discuss cutting back production from their current target of 33.6 million down to 32.5 million barrels per day. However, the price that, you know, they had their meeting, they agreed this. However, the price was increased massively post the meeting, despite today where there was an announcement that they would only be able to reach half of this this sort of cut in production. So I don't know if there's anyone wants to comment on the recent sort of findings that have happened or the recent sort of spike in reduction in price that we've seen today.
Well, I think like Saudi Arabia potentially might just completely change the price due to the fact that they're going to be trying to be pumping as much as they can into it as possible, and that might affect what they agree or not. I'm not really sure because I don't have that much knowledge on it, but if they don't stick to what they have agreed and just keep pumping in and try to affect the market, then that might have a massive effect.
Yeah, I think the problem is we discussed last week is Saudi Arabia is almost constraining this cartel, which isn't really a cartel. And there are no powers, there's no sort of, you know, there's no leading figure that really will limit production in Saudi Arabia or in Iran. So I think, yeah, that is one of the big issues. And as we've seen today, the price has fallen again post so the news that they would, you know, they're not really going to meet these targets. So the key news that's really been in the press recently is also the Italian election and the Austrian election. I think we'll begin first with the Italian election. I'll hand that over to the consumer goods team to sort of briefly outline what happened and what the outcomes are.
Italy had a referendum. It was something to do with constitutional reform, and the outcome of the election was no. So it basically, they have two powers in Italy, the Senate and the whatever. And the referendum was to decide to take powers away from the Senate. They voted no. This has led to the Prime Minister in Italy to resign. And it's caused like uncertainty in the Italian markets and banks as well.
Yeah, I don't actually know why Renzi held this referendum. They traditionally have a habit of turning into plebiscites on the government of the day, which is what happened here, taken over by extreme parties like the Five Star Movement. The bigger concern is what happens now. For the next year or so, it looks like we'll have a caretaker government, which would find us some stability. But the bigger question is what's going to happen in the elections then. Five Star Movement look like they're still going to be playing a force in politics, so I don't think the EU can rest easy in any way that this is going to be clean, smooth sailing from now on.
Yeah, I think ushering that point is Merkel. She, you know, is concerned. Germany are concerned about not necessarily the result of the election, sort of this movement away from sort of establishment politics and the constitution. It's more the fact that we've opened a new, there'll be an upcoming political election for a new government within Italy and a new prime minister. And this really, as you said, as Max said, really opens the room for a five-star movement and more right-wing politics and sort of this popularism that we're seeing sort of, you know, sweep across the UK, sweep across the US as well. So I think there are concerns that have been issued there. Has anyone got any additional points, maybe?
They have parliamentary elections in September 2018, so the fact that five-star movement is still there, they still have potential to even have a majority in parliament in 2 years' time, so it's not over in Italy, basically.
Yeah, there was an article today by Reuters that actually said there could almost be an election as soon as March next year. So I think, you know, this maybe the sort of right-wing sentiment would dissipate by September 2018, but upcoming, I think it's just going to continue sweeping across Europe. However, contrary to that, there obviously the Austrian election we've had over the weekend as well. And this was more obviously a vote for either right wing or left wing. The right wing presidential candidate losing. However, by quite a slim margin, and it wasn't as clear cut as we've seen elsewhere. So has anyone got any comments to add on the Austrian election, sort of the implications, potentially an opposite movement maybe we'll see in France, maybe a movement more towards liberal politics again and away from Le Pen?
Again, it was a close election, and in Austria it needs Europe. It's an exporting country, it's so close to Germany, it needs the ties within the Eurozone. And with France, Marine Le Pen is looking strong, and I don't think this election really has a bearing on that election. I think it's two different situations. I think that the following that Le Pen's getting is only growing and growing. I expect her to actually win the election in April.
It's quite surprising. Yeah. I think there's all that election coming up, and the Netherlands. Again, we've got another sort of big landmark election coming up in the coming year. I think moving on to markets, has anyone got anything to discuss about markets, the Italian banks, the euro? I think any comments on those?
Well, with the Five Star Movement, one of their main kind of why they're so popular is the fact that they want a referendum on whether they should stay in the Eurozone or not, and that could have absolutely massive repercussions with the European Union. I mean, if Italy was like the third largest economy in the Eurozone, if they want to leave, that could, and on top of that with France and Marine Le Pen, that could have massive effects for the European Union. On top of Brexit as well, it could lead to potentially the complete collapse of the European Union, maybe in the long run.
Noting on that point, it's not just the collapse of the European Union, but the collapse of the euro as well. Mm-hmm. I think if the European Union went down, I think the euro would also would have to follow almost. And I think touching on that is actually the euro is almost at parity with the dollar now, showing sort of the weakening environment within Europe and sort of the risk-off appetite within Europe. And again, on the banking sector in Italy, Monte dei Paschi down, and the CDS, so the credit default swaps on Italian banks up massively as well. The yield on those is spreading. So I think there are definitely concerns within markets, although they're quite subdued currently, but definitely could sort of increase in the coming weeks. So moving on, away from the market roundup, we're going to discuss the pharmaceuticals team. They've managed to find a few stock picks, and Max is going to do a quick market roundup of the pharmaceutical sector. So basically we're going to start with the work on Pfizer.
Sure, yeah.
Which Boris has done.
Sure, well, as you know, Pfizer is one of the big players of the industry, and I feel that investing now would see steady and consistent returns over the next year, and pretty much here's why. In terms of fundamental analysis, a big reason in investing has got to be Pfizer's diverse portfolio of their drugs. The well-known ones being Viagra and Lyrica, which have got pretty inelastic demands, and so this gives the company stable returns relative to the industry. Furthermore, Pfizer revealed recently it had 28 programs in oncology, which is a fast-growing sector of the industry, suggesting that their pipeline is expanding in new areas of healthcare and other companies, and also grow their pipeline.
I think an interesting note on that as well is Pfizer's got a really strong acquisition position.
They're
constantly making sort of bolt-on acquisitions or even sort of large movements and mergers into different business sectors.
Just to add on to that, secondly, the sheer size of their free cash flow is another big reason why it would be a good investment, and it basically signals the success of its long-term business plan. The fact that it's got such high free cash flow means it has, these liberties to acquire these other companies. Talk about, you only have to think about a few months ago was that they had tried to acquire Allergan for about 160 billion. Although that failed, it does quite clearly show their intentions to be ruthless in the industry.
One of the most aggressive pharmaceutical companies, and I think they sort of use their market power and their strength areas to definitely diversify their portfolio further. It's a really good pick.
And the last main encouraging sign is their high rate of reinvestment in R&D. basically seeks, the company seeks to be at the forefront of finding new drugs and medicines. But I think that the main reason for me investing was more of a macro reason. I mean, you just have to look at the politics in America. Obviously, the Trump victory, you've just seen someone who's gone against the Obama administration, who, you know, promised to cap market medicine prices and increase tax rates. And the Republicans have always had a close tie to big pharma companies. So I think whilst it will benefit all the companies in the industry, I think the big players who've got the power will benefit the most.
I think also the potential repeal of Obamacare could see maybe more privatisation of the market and potentially more control of a few large players. Are there any weaknesses you'd cite with that potential stock pick?
Well, there's obviously lots of competition in the industry and it's also quite volatile. But I think that Pfizer will see through it because of their diverse portfolio and their strengths in that area,
I think one of the key issues is, although they are aggressive in their acquisition space, that could also potentially create huge problems in, say, they have acquire an Allergan or a similar company, and it is not sort of, you know, a close match, the synergies aren't aligned, then we could see some potential sort of merger risk there
potentially
as well,
yeah,
which is another issue to consider.
Sure.
Okay, so that's it's a really interesting pick there. There's quite a few bits to debate about. So moving on, Nelly, which Josh, sorry. Harry's going to go first. So you're going to describe
AstraZeneca.
AstraZeneca.
Yeah, I've been looking at AstraZeneca stock, and they're basically one of the larger pharmaceutical companies. They've got a market cap of about $51 billion. They mainly focus on the discovery, development, and commercialization of medicines, but recently they've been changing their strategy, which is one of the main reasons while I've been looking at them. They've moved away from low-margin, mass-market prescription drugs to higher-margin treatments, such as immunotherapy. And they've recently been developing this drug called durvalumab. Not sure if that's how you pronounce it. But the FDA temporarily suspended their trials in October, which affected their stock price massively. It went down 20%. However, trials have recently been reinstated just last week. Their share price is yet to react. But if trials are positive, valuations have predicted that the share price is going to rise to around £60 to £64. It's currently around £40. So Credit Suisse predicts that their sales of this drug can be up to $1.8 billion by 2019, and cancer treatment is predicted to be up to 25% of their company by this stage as well.
And that's really interesting. I think maybe the move towards higher margin products and higher margin drugs is definitely potentially creating a new sort of monopoly on that sort of market, rather than, because there isn't a real bit large player that has really taking control of that area of the market.
No, you've kind of got lots of people trying to find treatments, but they're either not approved or they can't develop them. So,
do you think this presents one of the weaknesses maybe to your stock?
Yeah, there's still potential that the drug could be kind of suspended again by the FDA, but I think it's worth taking that risk, because if it is successful, they're going to absolutely just spike. And if they're not successful, they still have such a kind of a diverse company. They have their growth platform is now built on six areas, from oncology to metabolic diseases and respiratory as well. So they're not just completely focusing on this one drug.
That's my key point. They're such a large company that, say, if one business segment does underperform, they have strong performance in other business sectors, and there's a strong macro environment that would also support their business portfolio.
It's
a really interesting idea. Has anyone got any comments to add to AstraZeneca, or
do you know why the FDA didn't approve it?
There was, I think, something to do with, because it's to do with treating neck cancer, I think, and it led to some kind of internal bleeding. I'm not entirely sure, but this has now been stopped. It was the FDA found out that it wasn't actually to do with the drug, it was to do with specific people who had some kind of gene, I'm not sure. It led to the bleeding, so as long as it's not applied to these people.
Yeah, I think it's to an uneducated sort of, person or
someone
who isn't sort of versed in medicine or in pharmaceuticals wouldn't really know whether that was a potentially limiting factor. I think they definitely should, consider looking into that further, just in case, because I think one of the large things we found out from last year was that whenever pharmaceutical drug, if their drugs aren't approved, their stock prices plummet massively.
That's
so
one of the,
I think it's definitely
why,
something to look into. Okay, so finally we've got Georgia. And you're going to present, is it Mazet?
Merck.
Merck, okay.
So I'm going to be discussing Merck. Merck, like Pfizer, is an American, one of the largest pharmaceutical companies in the world. So it delivers global health solutions through the production of vaccines, prescription medicines, biologic therapies, and consumer care products. So it's highly diversified in what it provides. And it's consistently maintained strong demographics and strong financials, and it's very stable throughout its global reach. But one of the main reasons I think we should invest in this company is due to the development of this drug called Keytruda, which is already out on the market, but it's continuing to receive more FDA priority review tags, which means that they're fine, it's being approved to treat different things.
It's diversifying its treatment.
Yeah, pool. So the drug is becoming more diversified to treat more things. And Keytruda already is performing very well. So it posted $350 million in sales. So think about, that was in the third quarter just this year. So think about the sales it can produce, knowing that it can treat all these other diseases.
Is the drug exclusive to Merck?
Yes.
Or is it, okay, so it's their own drug and they have a patent over that.
Yeah, it's got a patent on it.
So if you'd assume, so if they diversify this, then treating wider sort of pool of illnesses, that, you know, they'd really be able to sort of increase that revenue that you spoke about there as well. So,
yeah, exactly.
Okay. What are the weaknesses of the stock pick?
The main weaknesses are on some of their products, their patents are ending, but this isn't much of a weakness because Merck has so many products in the pipeline and so many products on the market that it's not going to be that much of a big deal. And so, like, with the loss of patent exclusivity, this, like, gives rise to more biosimilars on the market, and so this could potentially this will reduce their revenues on their current drugs. But they have over 10 new products in phase 3 of testing, as well as various other drugs on the pipeline. So
is phase 3 the final stage?
It's the phase before the final.
Okay, so they're almost, you know,
almost
ready for
ready to be approved by the FDA.
Okay, so they're close to the larger human trials that we'll see as well.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, so that definitely creates, you know, opportunities within the company. What about the macro environment? Is it similar to the Trump condition again?
Yeah, because as soon as the Trump won the election, their stock price rocketed.
And do you think maybe that's potentially overbought, or do you think we'll see retracements within that? Or do you think that Trump's fiscal stimulus plan will be strong enough to really help boost the stock price?
When it comes into force, it will definitely massively boost pharmaceuticals in general.
Do you have any figures on how, or any of the companies, do you have any figures on how exportable the products are? Are they approved, if they're not approved just by the FDA, are they approved by NICE, or are they approved in Europe, or does anyone have any sort of data, sort of the global reach of the products?
I recently read that Keytruda has received NICE approval. Okay. I'm not sure what NICE is.
So that could be, basically that's now approved for the UK market, and then we're looking to go into the European market as well. So that's good, because obviously if it's approved in the States, it is obviously a huge market. However, Europe and sort of Asia and South America and the UK also present large markets as well. That's interesting, actually, that it's been approved by NICE. So that's another sort of positive, really, for the drug. Okay, so that's really interesting. I think what moving forward, we need to decide maybe one or two of those to develop further, because they are all three of them the largest pharmaceuticals companies. So I think we could use one of those as a base, or two of those as a base, and then build up from that, so maybe some more of the smaller companies that are more focused on R&D or more focused on innovative products. So then we can really kind of try and beat the market and beat sort of market performance. Has anyone got any points to add on that, or points to how we build our portfolio?
Just one question. When they're in the testing stage, are they competing with any other firms at the time, to get past it to produce the actual drug?
In that sense, they're just going through the regulations and being approved by the FDA in America, so they're not in direct competition with the firms at the time. But once their drugs are released, or once the patent ends, you know, all these firms want to get that drug. So, for example, you have these generic drug companies who are just looking for that end of the, what it's called, the patent cliff. So once that 10 years is up, all these companies are going to want that drug and sell them for cheaper. So that does pose a problem for a lot of these companies. But because all our companies are quite diverse and our portfolios are quite lengthy, and especially when, you know, Trump's policies come into fruition, I think these are all going to be solid investments.
Yeah, I think the point on Boris just mentioned there is we saw last year one of our companies, the drug sort of dropped off its patent, and one of these generic drug companies based in Thailand basically started replicating the drug at sort of a third of the price that the R company was making this drug at. So I think that is definitely something to consider, especially if Mazak are losing some of their, you know, the patents are ending and losing some of their exclusivity. So I think it's definitely something to consider, as Boris mentioned. That's a good question, actually, really good question. Is there any direction on what the consumer goods are going to bring next time? Are you looking to any particular regions or any particular companies, or has anything caught your eye in the news recently?
Before OPEC, India was like a growing market, but they're saying that OPEC is the oil, potential oil supply cut is going to have damaging effects to India. So I was looking in India, but now I'm probably going to still stick with Asia because it's such a fast growing region still, and maybe move into South America as well, because Brazil and other countries are moving
Asia is a really interesting option as well, because obviously we've seen in the Eurozone and the UK kind of stumbling growth, still growth, but, you know, sort of retractments in that. And again, I'd consider the US. I think you will see large US corporates, sort of, even the most obvious ones, Walmart's, definitely growing in the next couple of years with this sort of outlay of stimulus package by Trump.
I think also with Iran, like with their sanctions being lifted, still a country to look at and keep an eye on.
Yeah, I think definitely, because they've just started to be allowing their oil is now allowed onto the world market after the sanctions were lifted, as you said. Definitely one to consider, although I think investing within Iran is quite difficult. I don't know if we've had to check our broker to see if we can actually invest within sort of stock markets there, or if they have developed enough stock markets to do that. That pretty much concludes the second radio show. I'd like to thank everyone for coming, and if you've got any final questions, raise your hand now. Okay, perfect. Thank you. See you guys next time.